I had to spend a lot of money on my car, so I didn't have much left over for Christmas shopping. By the time I got something for all my nieces and nephews, I only had a couple dollars left for my boyfriend, Stuart. He knew about my car situation, and he told me that he didn't want anything, but I had to get him something. I took the little money I had and went to a thrift store. It was a dusty, smelly place, and there were homeless people hanging out right at the front window. Still, it was within my price range. I looked around the store, but I couldn't find anything. Then, out of nowhere, I found the perfect gift tucked away in a back corner. It was a beautiful red tie with a classy pattern. It looked so much nicer and more expensive than anything else he had in the shop. And the price tag said $2, so I knew it was perfect. As I walked towards it, I heard thudding footsteps behind me. A homeless man with a scraggly beard was running toward me, shouting that the tie was his. Scared, I ran to the front of the store, not realizing that I still had the tie in my hand. The guy behind the counter was a big tattooed guy. He walked around the counter and physically pulled the homeless man to the front door. Then he tossed him out like a bartender. The cashier lumbered back to me and asked if I still wanted to buy the tie. Part of me just wanted to leave, but I'd still have to go somewhere else to find a gift. In the end, I gave him the $2 and left with the tie. The homeless man was no longer in the parking lot. I ran to my car and drove back home. An hour later, I was getting dinner ready in the kitchen when someone knocked at my door. It was a polite knock, so I assumed one of my neighbors was needing something. I looked through the peephole, and there was the man from the thrift store. He'd somehow found my house. He smiled as if he knew that he was looking at me. "I'm calling the police," I shouted. "Please, ma'am," he said in a surprisingly polite voice. "Let me explain." He told me that the tie was his father's. He'd been saving up the $2 to buy it back, but I got it just before he did. He had a pile of coins in his palm, probably the $2, and he held it up to the peephole. "Can I buy it off you?" I took a second to consider, but maybe I did just misunderstand it the whole time. I came to the decision that I would just give him the tie for free. I didn't want a homeless person's money. I was about to tell him that he could have the tie, but he cut me off with a scream. "Give it to me!" I guess his calm attitude was an act, and when I didn't immediately respond to him, he showed his true colors. "No!" I shouted through the door. Then I pulled out my phone and called the police. As I was explaining the situation, the man kicked the door and then he left. I described what the man looked like to 911, and they said that they would have someone look into it. That was the best they could do. I felt instantly disappointed. I was expecting them to send an officer to camp out the front of the house, but I guess that only happens in movies. When Stuart got home, I told him everything. We both needed to watch out for that man. I didn't mention the tie, though. I just said that we had an argument at the thrift shop, and he followed me home. I'd already hidden the tie under the bed in the guest room. If the police didn't need it as evidence, I was still going to give it to Stuart. He helped me calm down and assured me that we were safe. He'd tell all the neighbors to keep watch. The next day, I was at work when my across-the-street neighbor called. Just like Stuart had said, she was keeping watch. And she said that she had just seen someone break into my house. She already called the police. I drove home right away, expecting the police to be there when I arrived, but they weren't. The front door was wide open, and it looked like the living room had been trashed. Clearly, the man had been looking everywhere for that tie. I walked toward the front door. I know it sounds crazy, but I wasn't scared. I should have been, but I really didn't feel anything in that moment. I stopped at the front door and looked inside. The living room was wrecked. The furniture was overturned, and everything from our bookcase was piled on the floor. "Where is it?" His voice came from behind me. I spun around and was face to face with the homeless man. His eyes were crazed, and his breath smelled rotten. "Where is it?" he demanded again. I looked past him to all the houses around me. Where were my neighbors? Where were the police? I knew someone would arrive soon, so the best I could do was stall for as long as possible. But when he pulled out a switchblade, I had to do exactly what he said. I led him inside, promising to take him to the tie. It was upstairs, but I didn't want to go up there with him. I needed to stay by the front door so the police could see me when they arrived. Thinking fast, I pointed toward the closet door next to the stairs. "It's in there," he believed me. With his knife still pointed in my direction, he approached the closet door. He opened it and looked inside. The closet was packed with stuff, and the light didn't work. "God, where is it?" he screamed again. I told him it was on the ground to his left under the big pile of boxes. He crouched down and looked, and that gave me the chance to kick the knife out of his hand and run back outside. The police had just parked outside. They rushed in and cuffed him pretty quickly. As they escorted him away, another policeman came in for the tie. He stuffed it in an evidence bag and left. We found out a few hours later that the tie had traces of blood on its fabric that matched the victim of an unsolved murder. The homeless man had been after it because he knew it had evidence of his crime. On Christmas, I gave Stuart socks. He loved them.
I was all ready to fly home for Christmas, but there was a huge blizzard in the area and all flights were canceled. That meant I was stuck in my apartment while all my family was having fun at the beach. Thankfully, I wasn't alone. My roommate Naya's flight was canceled too, so we were stuck inside together. She wasn't in a very good mood though. She kept sulking around the apartment and snapping at me over nothing. It seemed like she missed her family even more than I missed mine. Everything changed on Christmas morning when her sister Minnie called. We just opened our presents from each other and didn't have anything else to do. When her phone rang, she raced out of the room for some privacy, but she was so loud and excited that I heard every word. Her sister was on her way. She had been planning to spend the holidays with her roommate, but I guess they got into an argument the day before. Rather than stay there, Minnie drove all the way through the blizzard to see her sister. I could hear Naya squeal with excitement through the door. When she came back in, she told me everything, even though I'd already heard it all. Then she ran around the apartment to get things ready for Minnie's arrival. Eventually, she decided to walk through the snow to the bodega down the street. She wanted to buy all of Minnie's favorite snacks. She told me she'd be back in a couple of minutes. She wasn't. She was gone for a long time. I started to get worried. I could see how heavily the snow was falling. What if something had happened to her? They'd been doing some construction next door, but had to stop because of the weather, leaving behind dangerous equipment and big, open holes in the ground. What if she'd fallen into a hole or something? I called her cell, but I heard it ring from her bedroom. She'd left it behind. I was about to go outside and look for her when someone knocked at the door. It was Minnie, shivering and covered in snow. She introduced herself because I'd never met her before, but I let her inside. She wrapped me in a big hug. She said that Naya talked about me all the time, which I assumed was an exaggeration. Then she said, "I just saw Naya at the bodega. She's flirting with the hot cashier, so she told me to go ahead without her." That definitely sounded like her. Minnie and I talked for a while. I showed her around the apartment and got her some hot chocolate. She asked me a bunch of questions about my life, and it was obvious that she'd lied about Naya talking about me all the time. She didn't know anything about me. Still, it was a pleasant conversation, and I got a really good feeling about her. Naya still wasn't back, though. I asked Minnie if Naya had said what time she'd walk home, but she didn't remember. I told Minnie to wait there. I was going to go outside and look around. She told me not to worry, but I couldn't shake the feeling that something wasn't right. Just as I was opening the door, Minnie rushed forward and grabbed my wrist. "Don't go out there," she whispered right in my face. Her expression was surprisingly threatening. "Let go," I told her, trying to hide the surprise and fear in my voice. I shook my hand free. She pressed down on the door so I couldn't open it. "Don't go," she screamed.
What part of that do you not understand?
I came to a horrible realization. This wasn't Naya's sister. I just assumed she was, but I'd never asked for any ID, and she didn't look or act anything like Naya. I had to get away from her. I shoved her to the side as hard as I could. I did knock her down, but I was able to move her out of my way and run outside. The snow turned everything into a blurry white haze, but I was able to see something on the ground. Bodies. There were two bodies lying in front of our building, slowly being buried under the falling snow. One of them was Naya, and the other one must have been Minnie. The real Minnie. They were both dead. I stood there staring for too long, because the imposter had already walked down the stoop toward me.
I told you to not go outside, she said darkly.
I demanded to know who this woman was. My question immediately made her cry. The tears froze against her face as she explained that she was Minnie's roommate. She was so furious that Minnie had abandoned her right before Christmas that she followed her all the way here. She'd found Minnie and Naya together at the bodega. She'd confronted them, trying to get them to invite her along. But Minnie told her to leave. They started walking back to our apartment, ignoring her. Just as they were about to enter, she attacked them. Naya hit her head on the steps and Minnie was strangled.
And that's when I met you, she continued. If I couldn't spend Christmas with Minnie, then I'd spend it with you. You seem nice enough. But then you stupidly walked outside. She made it sound like it was my fault she'd just murdered two people.
There was no point reasoning with her. I backed away from her, getting ready to start running. She kept walking closer. My feet stepped over the rocks that lined the edge of our apartment side yard. I was now standing in the construction site next door. I looked around the ground and saw the deep hole that the construction crew had left behind. There was a caution sign at its edge, but that had been covered with snow. I stepped around it, trying not to draw any attention to where I was walking. The woman was so focused on my face that she didn't see the hole that she was about to step into. One second, she was staring me down, her hands balled into fists. Then, she tumbled into the 6-foot-deep trench. The bottom was covered in hard ice and jutting metal. Her body made a horrible snap when she struck the ground. I looked down at her and saw that a piece of metal had pierced her through the torso. She reached up toward me and mumbled,
"I just wanted to spend Christmas with someone."
Then, she stopped moving. I went back inside and called the police. For the rest of the holiday, I was all alone.
I hadn't seen my family in 3 years, and I was really nervous about making a good impression. This was my one shot to get them to accept me again. Unfortunately, I took a wrong turn on the way to their new house, and I was already almost an hour late for Christmas dinner. I sped down the road as fast as I could, while the sun set directly in front of me. I used to be really close with my parents, but once I got engaged to Jose, things got really tense. They didn't approve of my fiancé, which led to a bunch of arguments. It was awful. Eventually, I was forced to decide between Jose and my parents, and I chose Jose. That was a huge mistake. He turned out to be a real creep, gaslighting me and acting really possessive. It took me 3 years to finally break up with him. That was the best decision I ever made. But it came with a lot of grief, too. I had to admit to my family that they were right about everything. They told me that all they wanted was for me to be safe and happy, but I could hear the judgment in their voices. I really wanted our relationship to go back to the way it was, but I worried that the damage had already been done. I was speeding down the forest road leading to their house when I saw a figure standing at the tree line. I was minutes away from my parents' house, and I really wanted to drive on past. But I couldn't leave this poor woman all alone on such a cold night. She was tall and blonde, wearing a dress that offered her very little protection from the cold. I pulled up next to her and rolled down the passenger side window.
"Do you need a ride somewhere?"
The woman turned from me, so I couldn't see her face, just her long, tangled hair. I noticed that her dress was torn, and she had bloody scratches on her arms.
Without looking at me, she whispered,
"Help."
Then she ran into the forest. My brain was telling me to just drive away. I'd done my part. It wasn't my fault that this stranger had run away instead of accepting my offer. But my heart was telling me that this lady was in real danger. If I just left her there, I'd never be able to forgive myself. So I turned off my engine and followed her into the forest. It was really dark under the trees, but I could see movement up ahead. I sped up, and so did she. She was running farther and farther from the road. I shouted for her to stop. Finally, she did. She stood stock still, waiting for me to catch up, still facing the other direction. I could see her shoulders trembling from the cold. I carefully approached, expecting her to start running again. She didn't. I touched her shoulder and she spun around, finally revealing her face. She wasn't a woman at all. She was Jose, wearing a cheap blonde wig and a dress that he'd gotten from my own closet. His eyes were crazed and his cheeks were sunken. It looked like he'd lost a lot of weight since our breakup. He was also missing one of his front teeth. "I missed you, babe," he said as he wrapped his arms around me. It started out like a hug, but then he clamped down on my arms and pulled me even further into the forest.
"What are you doing?"
I demanded. "You like my look?" he asked. "I needed something to get your attention." He explained that his car was parked on a hidden dirt road. He was going to take me back home with him before I could reach my parents. He blamed them for splitting us up. He thought that if I finally saw them again, they'd get their little hooks in me, and he'd lose me forever. His hands were clamped very tightly around my arms. I had no hope of escape. But then I realized how thin he'd gotten. I saw how cold he was in the night air. He wasn't as strong as he used to be. So I kicked his shin. He loosened his grip for just a second, but it was long enough for me to free myself and run away. He chased after me for about 5 minutes. I had no idea where I was in the forest, but I could see the last glow of light from the setting sun. I had been driving in that direction, so I used the light as a guide. Jose struggled to catch up, but it was hard for him to run in his dress. He kept screaming,
"Stop! You can't see them!"
After what felt like forever, I reached the end of the trees and a low yellow fence. It was the border to my parents' property. I knew that Jose was pretty far behind me now. His voice echoed through the trees.
"Don't go inside!"
I reached the front door of a small cozy cabin. It looked even cuter than the pictures. I knew this was my parents' house. I pounded on the front door and it slowly creaked open. It wasn't fully shut.
"Mom? Dad?"
All the lights were on, but the house was very quiet. As soon as I rounded the corner to the kitchen, I knew exactly why Jose didn't want me to go home. He'd already gotten to my parents. They were lying side by side on the tile floor. "I'm sorry," Jose said behind me. I didn't realize he'd caught up to me so fast. I spun around, expecting to see him standing behind me, but he wasn't. I could see through the window that he was outside the house. He hadn't apologized to me. He said sorry to the two policemen who were pointing their guns at him. I didn't know who called them, but they must have just arrived. I watched through the window as they cuffed him and led him away. I was so close to reconnecting with my parents again, but because of Jose, I never got my chance.